Well, Mimi's about to die again. She's got consumption. Nobody's got enough money for her medicine. She's been dying regularly for close to 200 years now. We never get tired of it. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Why do people love opera? It's so over the top, expensive to produce. Our statewide phone number, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk@alaskapublic.org. Your story of why you love opera or don't is the subject on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Okay, here's the deal. It's a dress rehearsal tonight for La Boheme in Fairbanks. Yes, I said Fairbanks, Alaska. A full-scale Puccini opera from 1830 or whenever it was is about to be performed in Fairbanks. It's their one and only production of the year, and we're going to tune in on all the excitement, and including speaking with, well, even Mr. Fred Plotkin is going to be on this show today, Mr. Opera himself. And so I think I'll just try and get going with our guests. This is Opera Fairbanks. It's once a year, and the artistic director is Gregory Buckhalter. Gregory, welcome to Talk of Alaska. How are you doing?
I'm doing great this morning. Thank you. So, I want to clarify that we actually do three productions a year. We do one large production, which happens over the summer. I come out here to conduct that every year. And there are two other productions that go on through the course of the year. One is more or less a children's opera, and but they are on smaller scales. But we do three things technically a year.
Okay, well, great. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. The one of the things that I want to kind of stress in this show is that opera, the whole idea of getting opera to places where it doesn't usually go, and often you do that by breaking it down, by having soloists who like can travel, they can have recitals, and you
right.
could do things like that to bring at least some dimensions of it, not the full production, to different audiences. And this time, we're going to do it by radio. But I wanted to just really quickly talk about your production here because you're right in the middle of it right now, and people might even want to go into Fairbanks to go to it.
People must go to this production. It's going to be the best thing we've done by far. I just want to say a little bit, touching upon what you briefly stated, is that with Opera Fairbanks, I think we are a unique company in that, because of my affiliation with the Metropolitan Opera, where I'm an assistant conductor through much of the year, I have access to and resources to some of the greatest singers in the world. Last year we had Paul Plischka, who is, you know, a great veteran of the Met stage and the international opera scene, come out and sing in Elisir d'Amore with Jamie Rose, our other guest today. And this year we have several artists from the Met. Again, and our stage director, Jonathan Loy, is a colleague of mine from the Met. So what I try to do is bring some of the greatest artists from the world singing in opera to Fairbanks, and it's never hard to lure people to come to Alaska, I must say that. In fact, that's how I started coming here. But in addition, we like to use local singers and kind of create a mix so that the great pros of the opera stage can come to Fairbanks, and the maybe less experienced but equally wonderful singers that are either Alaskan or actually in some cases right here in Fairbanks can get so much experience from singing with these great pros, singing next to them and learning from them. And so that the full production is a real integration of, like I said, pros and maybe not as experienced singers. And I think that is part of the personality that Opera Fairbanks presents. Of course, we have a local orchestra and chorus, and yes, you said that we're right in the midst of it. The orchestra is so passionate about what we do here, and it's just so rewarding for me to work with them. I just conducted last week with this orchestra a concert including Mahler's Fourth, which anybody who knows that is a mammoth piece in the symphonic literature, and the orchestra has not had a night off in 2 weeks. We've been rehearsing between the concert and Bohème every night. So
Man, these people are driven
with, you know, so much excitement.
The string players are getting blisters. Well, Gregory, tell me a little bit about yourself. I mean, when did you decide that you wanted to be a part of this world of opera?
Well, Cassandra Tilly, who has founded the company, called me out of the blue. I was working in Santa Fe, about maybe 7 years ago, and I just got a message from her, and I barely knew who she was. I had apparently, as she had told me, given a master class in Columbus, Ohio, that when I was passing through, and she was one of the participants, and she remembered me and was impressed with the work we had done together, and she knew that I'm conducting a lot these days, and she said, "Hey, how would you like to come to Alaska to conduct?"
Wow.
And like I said, it's never hard to lure these great people from all over the world,
right,
from New York, because Alaska has this exotic connotation about it, and I, having never been here, thought, "My God, Alaska, so remote. How is that possible?" And I had actually always thought of coming to Alaska, but I never had that impetus. So this was the impetus to bring me here.
Yeah, but Gregory, what I want to do is go way back when maybe you were a kid. But when did you first come in contact with this world of opera and decide you wanted that?
Oh, Lord. I just grew up with opera. I mean, I was exposed to it from an early age. I must say, listening to the Metropolitan Opera broadcasts as a kid and going to the library and getting the score out and following along, it was just a passion that I had. Little did I know one day, I'd be working at the Met myself. And then I must say I trained as a pianist, and I never felt fulfilled being alone on the concert stage playing the piano. I always was inspired by working with other people. So, when I started working with singers and I felt I was able to make better music. I was a better musician. And, of course, working in an opera, you can't ask for more people to work with. I mean, you have an entire cast and chorus and orchestra and singers.
Yeah, your whole... So obviously, you must come from a musical family. I mean, if you... You're getting scores, and they're playing opera in your household and so forth.
Well, in New York, it's not hard to get those resources.
Yeah.
And I was in music school, when I was young. But I just developed the interest in opera because of the dramatic quality of it. There's just so much, having a storyline makes the music for me so much more intriguing and interesting. And, I mean, we can talk about Bohème. You can't ask. I mean, what's great about Puccini is he incorporated a style called Verismo, and that in Italian means realism, truism. And his operas are all based on everyday life, I mean, subjects that people can relate to. And the story of Bohème with the tragic lovers and the, the circle of friends who are poor, I mean, it's, it's
sticking the rich,
by rent.
Sticking
so
the rich guy
everyone
with,
can relate to.
Sticking the rich guy with the bill. That's also part of it.
Yeah, there you go, right.
And going out and buying the cheap booze, because that's all you can afford.
Yeah, and then musically, I mean, Bohème is just filled with big, juicy melodic lines and rich orchestral coloring, which, flavors the poignant storyline. So, I mean, Bohème, I know your other guests, I'm sure, will talk much about it, but there's just something for everybody in it, and nobody should be intimidated by it because it's, quote, opera, and it's in another language that people don't understand, because these days, we use surtitles so that everyone can be reading the English translation as it's happening. There's absolutely nothing intimidating about opera, and especially La Bohème.
Oh, man, and I mean, it's just got to be in Italian, too. I mean, it just simply has to. Well, I mean, because you're so expressive, I mean, these are vast feelings that are being put across here.
Well, the musical flow was written in a certain language, and, one can do opera in English and translate it, but you lose so much of the originality. I mean, it's a little bit like reading a novel translated. So much depends on the translation, but if one can read the original, one gets the real coloring and flavor of it. But like I said, because one can read the text in English along with it, there's absolutely no problem with doing it in the original language.
Well, I'll have to say this. My education was in the arts, and mm-hmm. And I come from a small town, so, you know, I appreciated the cultural advantages of getting to a city where the art school was. But I really disdained opera. I thought, this is, first off, it's old. Second off, you know, the real cutting edge musical stuff I was interested in, it seemed that opera wasn't really part of it. And this lasted until in art school where I went, which was in Philadelphia. They have a rotunda, and they brought some opera singers in there. And as the students there, we were allowed to go in there and sit while they were doing their recital. And, you know, my disdain for opera disappeared with the first note I heard that was sung by a fully equipped opera singer, because something, Gregory, just went right through me, you know, and it stuck in me.
I have a similar story. When you asked how I first was exposed to opera, I remember I was a young kid in school, and we all went to the auditorium and were told that there was going to be a quartet of singers coming to sing for us, and, you know, nobody knew what it was. And this young woman came and sang the Habanera from Carmen with a rose between her teeth. And I was just, as a little lad, just captivated by that. I mean, the picture of this, you know, beautiful young woman with a rose between her teeth singing this very sexy and seductive aria, and that's all it took. And at that point, I just had to have more and learn more and find out what this was all about. It was so intriguing. And I think it's just, again, the dramatic aspect of it. It wasn't just a piece of music, but it was the whole picture. It was what it was representing.
What shocked me was the way that the voice filled the room. You just don't get that in your everyday conversation. Maybe some people get it in church a little bit, but I go to meetings, you hear people shouting and carrying on in oratory and whatnot, but opera, the voice has gone someplace you don't usually get to hear a voice doing.
I think it's what's behind that, too, that there is a storyline. We are singing words, we are singing text, we are singing a situation, we are emoting feelings when we sing. You know, opera is based on passion and almost always some form of love, and there's just so much behind it, behind the loud singing, behind the loud noises that come out from the people. Now, let alone that, beautiful sounds, you know, when you have a gorgeous voice, like I can say for the cast we have in La Boheme, just the sheer sound coming out of the people's bodies is enough to intrigue one. But then, you know, with what's behind it, I just want to say something very briefly too. You said opera in Fairbanks of all places. I mean, I do work at the Metropolitan Opera, and our production of La Boheme, which we do every single year, is a very famous Zeffirelli production. Yes, it costs an enormous amount of money to put opera on in that aspect. But here in Fairbanks, where, of course, we're far more humble, we have a staff that is mostly volunteer, which works so hard. And I feel with the Met singers we have, we can do as great a job as what the Met can do. Now, of course, we don't have the same budget, but, I mean, we have a fantastic set that Jonathan Loy has been responsible for here and all our people who have built it. You know, I must say I've worked at many opera companies all over the world. This is the only opera company where every single rehearsal staff has brought food for the singers and the orchestra. And I don't just mean food. I mean fresh salmon, home-baked meals, fresh fruit. I mean, we are treated so well here because there is such a great spirit of the community here. They are so thankful for what we are bringing to Fairbanks. And, you know, what I want to say is, you could go to New York and spend $200 to $300 for a ticket to see La Boheme, or you can come right here in your own backyard and see Met singers, the greatest singers around, and get it for, you know, almost nothing.
So, okay, well, wait, let's get to the voices here.
Great.
Joining us by telephone from Fairbanks is soprano Jamie Rose Guarin. Do I have that right, the pronunciation, Jamie Rose?
Yes, sir. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. And you...
Hey, Jamie Rose.
Hello. Hi, Greg.
Who do you play in this opera?
I play the party girl, Musetta.
So, yes, and you are ready?
Oh, yes, we are very ready. I live here in Fairbanks. I'm not originally from Fairbanks. I am a transplant. I'm originally from the Midwest. It's a kind of a funny story. Just like Greg said, he got the call to come up to Fairbanks when he was in Santa Fe. I was actually in Santa Fe as well, singing in Marriage of Figaro, and my husband, who is a cellist, got the call that he got a job. And I said, "You got a job teaching cello where?" And he said, "Fairbanks." And I thought, "What?" But we love it here. It's been a fantastic adventure. We just bought a house last summer. And so I spend my time here whenever I can. And then I sing all over the country when I am away. And it's a beautiful balance.
Yeah. So you get to, as Gregory does, you... And I guess many people in the professional musical world do now. You've got to be, not exactly a gypsy, but you have to travel in order to do your jobs.
Yes, it's very different being an opera singer from being an orchestral musician. Orchestral musicians tend to stay put. They are linked with a certain orchestra, and that is their job. Opera singers, on the other hand, we maybe have a manager in New York or somewhere in Europe, and then we are, as you say, the gypsy life. So we go where the gig is. So it's a fantastic adventure, but you get very good at packing and keeping your suitcase underweight.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful chance to see the world.
Well, I want to kind of ask you the same question that I asked Gregory, I think I'd like everyone to kind of think about this too, is when did you first make your connection? I mean, obviously you have a talent and a gift, and you had to have that encouraged, and then you had to train it and on like that. But if you go back before that, you know, what was it that drew you to opera to start with?
Oh, sure. Well, I'm Italian. I grew up in an Italian-American household, and my mother would play Luciano Pavarotti in the house. Mm. So I grew up sort of with that in my ear, hearing Nessun Dorma in my ear. And then when I went to school, I grew up in Peoria, Illinois, which is only a few hours from Chicago. And when I was in junior high, we had the opportunity to take a bus and go see an opera at the Lyric. We got to go see my first opera that I ever saw was Carmen. And I remember thinking and being so in awe and seeing all the dancing gypsies and hearing that fantastically vivid sound coming out that was not amplified in any way. Opera, I don't know if most people know this, but opera is not amplified. We all sing from our little bodies and try and fill the 3,000-seat house as best we can. And that's a talent in itself in a way. And I was so in awe of that. And I grew up singing at church. And then when I got in college, I found that I sort of had a voice that was intuned or sizable and in the operatic style. So that's what sort of that little seed that was planted going to see a show when I was young sort of grew into this desire for a career.
Wow. Sizable. I love that. I love that word.
Yeah.
I'm going to turn my studio guest. It turns out that we've got an opera singer, an opera director, a former opera director who's now working here at Alaska Public Telecommunications, Tori Allen, formerly of the Anchorage Opera. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Tori.
Hi, Steve. Thanks. Good to be here.
Yeah, I asked Tori to come on because when we first started thinking about this program, I was trying to focus, and I thought the focus really needs to be, there's probably many people listening to the radio would never dream of themselves being connected with opera at all, let alone being in love with it. And so then Tori proceeded to tell me the story that I'd like him to tell again now of how he fell in love with it.
Oh, actually, it was La Boheme. It was at UCLA about 20-something years ago, and they were producing a production of La Boheme. It was the first time that I was exposed to the art form, knew nothing about opera, nothing about Italian. but I sat in the audience and was just completely transformed. Unbelievable. And after that, I went to, I was a poli sci major at UCLA, but I went to the arts side of campus and went to the music school. And met with a voice teacher and talked with him. And his name was John Guarnieri. And he was known as the Caruso of the West Coast, an incredible voice. And in my consultation with him, he started singing. And he engaged the body and he engaged vocal muscles in a way that I had never experienced before. And I was completely blown away. It was an incredible voice.
Did you have the well, in broadcasting we call it, balls. Did you have that basso quality in your voice that you have now back then?
I think so, you know, because about 10 years before that, as a kid, I grew infatuated with Jim Nabors and Robert Goulet. And some of the first prayers that I sent out to the universe were, God, let me please sound like them when I get older.
Oh, my God. Okay, now, are you still willing to do this, what we talked about?
Right. I can sing.
I wanted to get a demo, and you can't really get a demo over the phone, Jamie Rose, where I would ask you to sing. But I asked Tori to sing, and he actually is going to give us a piece of, I think he's got an aria for, well, you tell us.
Well, Steve, you're putting me on the spot. Actually, you know, Jamie would be really, I'm telling you, she's one of the best.
Yeah.
But there's a, you know, the part that I would do as a bass baritone would be Collina, the philosopher. And at the end of the opera, he decides that he's going to sell his jacket to raise funds to buy some.
Yeah, I guess
some...
we have to tell the story a little bit.
Yeah.
We got the Bohemians, and they're up in the garret, and they don't have any money, and one's a philosopher, and they're artists and philosophers and poets and whatnot. And this girl, Mimi, who lives, loses her key, and she's downstairs or someplace, and they just, love is involved. And cafes.
That's good.
And cafes. But Mimi develops a cough, and then by the end of the opera, she's going to die.
Okay, we should have you narrating the operas.
She's going to die at the end of opera. You can kind of count on that.
That's
in an
great
opera. Pretty much, you're going to have somebody die. So anyway, it's a terrible, sad thing as she dies. I mean, obviously, her lover is very broken up about this. But the guy that's singing here, Tori, right? He's the philosopher that lives in the garret,
and he has this old coat that he wears, and he sings, and he towards the end he sings this aria, Vecchia Cimara, my faithful old colt, and I can probably give you a few bars, and that's it.
Yeah,
anything else would be, you know, not in shape that much. But it goes, I hope I have the right note.
it's okay. I wish I had a piano. Ding, ding.
Vecchia Cimara, senti, io resto al pianto, scende, io resti al prendo. I'm forgetting the words. Or something like that.
It's okay.
Anyway, I'm forgetting the
words.
It's
been a while. Bravo.
I'm sure Greg has a really fabulous Collina in this production.
Good for you, Tori. That was great. But the thing is, Bohem, first of all, what I also want to say is that the opera world is so small. I mean, I know Tori very well. Of course, Jamie Rose and I have worked together a lot. Fred Plotkin is a really, really good friend that, you know, I've known for many years from New York. So, I mean, what is the likelihood of being on a radio show and just knowing all the guests? But in the opera world, we just all know each other. And I just think that's fantastic.
I haven't seen Tori for a couple of years. Hello.
Hi there, Jamie. Jamie did a fabulous production that we did up here a few years ago. Spellbinding Moments in French Opera. It just blew everyone away.
Wow. Spellbinding Moments. Yeah. I am. Our telephone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 1-800-478-8255. 478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk@alaskapublic.org. And I haven't really checked the email. I did get a message earlier, however, and this is kind of along the lines of our theme of bringing opera, the love of opera, the dimension of opera to new audiences. It's going to be happening in Sitka, they say, in August, where they have, as part of the Fine Arts Camp, they're going to do, they're bringing in three young opera singers from the University of Puget Sound School of Music, Douglas Smith will be playing piano from Juno, and they are, let me see here, Alaskans, Rhiannon Gevin from Sitka, and Patrick Schneider from Homer, baritone. Rhiannon is soprano, and Katrina Deininger, who, let's see, is, I can't quite figure out where she's from. But anyway, yeah, they're all from this the same music school, and they'll be performing starting on the 29th with a viewing of the Marx Brothers Night at the Opera. And going on to
I think it's very important because the theme here is, of course, about bringing opera to people and not being intimidated, but it's so important to educate the young people of today to opera. And I know at the Met, we actually, again, one of my first experiences was as when I was in high school, was going to a dress rehearsal at the Met, which we regularly do. We have kids come in all the time, and I know we were prepped in our classes about the story and listening to some of the music. So by the time we went and saw the opera, we were well prepared and really knew what it was about. And I think all opera companies, including what we do at Opera Fairbanks, a very important mission is to bring opera to the schools and to young people and get them interested from an early age so that, like your experience, Steve, you're not intimidated, you know, from an early age, but that you can go right into it and identify with it, with the stories, with the characters. Some operas like The Magic Flute have, you know, are really particularly geared for children, and I think it's just so important that that is, you know, happening and brought up. So yes, in a camp situation or whatever, I think it's just so important that children are exposed to it, because I would never have known that I had this great passion and talent if I wasn't exposed to it when I was young. I mean, it might have totally gone by me. Who knows?
Jamie Rose, you're doing Musetta.
Yeah.
Musetta is kind of like she's the party gal.
She is, and she doesn't want to have anything to do with all that poor business.
Right, and she gets herself a rich boyfriend even.
Right.
For a while.
The famous Bill Reed, yes.
but she is still attracted to these artists. I mean, she wants to be around them just the same, right?
Oh, yes. Her true love is Marcello, the painter. And even though at the beginning she does sort of have this tumultuous love relationship where they're in love one day, they're out of love the next day.
I've been there.
But, you know, pretty much any time she's going after the bucks, it's when she's just trying to make Marcello jealous, I think, to make the reunion all the more sweet.
So, I often, one of the first opera people that I learned was Joan Sutherland. What a great one to learn. And, and what, you know, it was like, you know, she would throw herself into those roles. I mean, she became that person. Do you do that? Do you try and do that?
I mean, you have to become as close as you can, I think, to the ideal of what that person is. And especially with a close connection to the text, whenever I'm on stage, I just let that text carry me to know what you're saying at any given moment and just sing emotionally from your heart.
So your family still speak in some Italian and all that? So you really know what you're saying?
Well, you know, there is what it is Italian speaking in opera sometimes is a little more archaic, especially in Mozart. But in Puccini, it's actually much more modern. So when I know it's easier to know what I'm singing in La Bohème than, let's say, Marriage Figaro.
Oh, yes.
Because the words, you know, it's like you said, it's in the 1830s. They're actually written much later, almost to 1900. So it's much more closer to modern Italian. And, of course, I'm looking to Fred, and he's nodding, saying, yes, Dave Rose, you are correct. But, you know, as an Italian-American family, too, we all know choice words and how to say manicotti and gabagool, you know.
Oh, sure, of course. Do you have a favorite moment, then? I mean, what you're really looking forward to and want to be sure you get right and nail and whatnot?
I mean, the finale of this opera is so emotional. When she passes away and when she, or even when she comes
in. So we can be assured that Mimi will not be singing after that.
No, yeah. Very easy.
Well, the great thing about opera is somebody could be dying and sing for another 20 minutes. I mean, Jill Dunn Rigoletto is a great example. She's stabbed and still goes on for another 15 minutes or so singing. That is a unique experience in opera.
Right. But it's just, I'd say the most beautiful moment is seeing these friends who maybe have been, you know, this person, this Mimi, who comes into their life. It's like this angel and completely transforms all of them. Especially my character, I think, goes through a huge arch, a changing of who she is, and you find that she really will give everything for her friends at the end. So for me, that's a really interesting arc in a very short amount of time. You know, you only have about 3 hours to, you know, tell the story.
Wow, 3 hours?
Yeah,
well,
maybe.
2 hours of music, but we're including intermission time, I think.
Of course. I know, sorry,
hours.
Greg.
Yeah.
That's it. No,
it goes by so quickly, though.
Yes. No, La Boheme, you know, it's carrying around. It's definitely one of the lighter scores.
Yeah.
It's not good.
Yeah. So that's the one. So you it's at the end where you really get to rock out.
I mean, I think that, I mean, emotionally, that's a very poignant. But I'm very fortunate to have one of the most famous arias in all of opera, Quando Men Vo. When I go down the street, everyone looks at me at all the beautiful clothes I'm wearing. That's a very, very awesome act, too. And we have a little special cameo from one of our local local canine specialities in Act 2 as well. So it should be a rip-roaring fun.
Rip-roaring. I love it.
Yes. The thing is, there's a lot of comedy in La Boheme. I mean, we're talking about the tragic aspect of it, but it's filled. Right. I mean, all of Act Two is fun with a children's chorus and a toy vendor and mothers scolding their children, and even a little boy has a solo line. I mean, there's so much fun in the opera too.
Yeah, you got all that great street life.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, it definitely reads as a comedy, as a fun comedy that just has a little tragic ending, I think.
Well, I mean, but there's a build-up to it, too. I mean, she starts coughing fairly early, doesn't she?
She starts coughing fairly early. It's good.
All right. Jamie Rose, thank you so much for being with us. I'm going to ask you to pass the phone over to Fred Plotkin, Mr. Opera himself, and we'll pick up with him at the second half of the show as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Providence Imaging Center, providing diagnostic mammogram results to patients within one working day, led by Drs. Denise Farley and Heather Tauschik, provimaging.com.
You can find APRN headlines and more online at alaskapublic.org. Local, national, and international news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. AlaskaPublic.org, connecting you to Alaska, one story at a time.
It's Talk of Alaska. The subject is love of opera. If you Alaskans know this, but Fairbanks is one of the best-kept secrets. Fairbanks in the summer has wonderful virtues to it, really wonderful virtues. It doesn't really rain all that much. It gets very warm, and it's gorgeous day after gorgeous day after gorgeous day. It's absolutely fabulous. If you're listening on the web from somewhere scorching in the lower 48, eat your heart out. Fairbanks in the summer. And now it gets even better because they're about to produce La Boheme. I cannot believe it. I mean, so here it is, fabulous, and you get to go to a fabulous professional production of La Boheme. And the artistic director of Opera Fairbanks, Gregory Buckhalter, is with us. Gregory, I think I should give you a chance to talk a little bit about the rest of the cast you have.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to say Alaska is very well represented because our heroine, Stasia Jameson, is from Anchorage. Jamie Rose has talked about being a local girl, more or less. And we have our Colleen, which is the character that Tori had demonstrated the aria from. David Miller is from Juneau. And our Shonar, Joe Perrin, is also from Anchorage. So here we are bringing singers from the Met, but we also have a complete roundup of singers from right here locally from Alaska. And I just think that's one of the things Opera Fairbanks takes great pride in, that we are able to create this mix.
And you're not, this is not one of those deals where you got a boombox that's playing the orchestra. You really have musicians too.
We have a whole orchestra. Largely comprised of members of the Fairbanks Symphony. And I must say also something, if people are not aware of it, but that playing opera is a very, very different skill for an orchestra from playing symphonic music. And playing Puccini in particular has a lot of tricky aspects. I talked about how the melodic line and content is so rich, but it's a completely different style. There's a lot of give and take in the music. We call that rubato, where you literally rob from one note and then kind of give back in another note. And it's really not so easy to do. It requires a lot of concentration. The other thing that's unique in opera for the orchestra players that does not happen in symphonic music is that there are a lot of empty measures where they do not play, where there might be singing going on. And it's very easy for them to lose track of where they are. Again, an orchestra like the Met knows this opera inside and out. We do it literally every other night. But an orchestra who's playing this for the first time, it presents a lot of tricky challenges. And I'm just so proud of the group that we have and how high their concentration level is and their, like I said, enthusiasm for playing a score like this. So, and it's great that we got to play a Mahler symphony and some other symphonic works on the program. And then here we're doing a completely different style, that of Puccini, Italian opera.
Complete with rubato.
I have to chime in here, and that is the orchestra wouldn't be able to access this sort of dynamic range without a great conductor. And so Greg is being a little bit humble here, because I drove up a couple years ago to see a production of Tosca, and I got the chills in certain passages when he was conducting. It was really fabulous that he had the confidence to stand on the podium and conduct in such a way that the orchestra could engage in that kind of musical dynamicism. Because if you don't have a conductor with that kind of deep feel and that kind of incredible capacity, it could be very dry. It can be a very dry experience listening to the orchestra. It's just 40 instrumentalists together playing music. But if you have someone that can bring soul to it, it's a totally different experience. And so, Greg, I'm sure this Boheme is going to have a lot of soul.
Wow, I mean, that's awfully kind of you. I must say my mentor, James Levine, who I work with at the Met, I mean, he taught me so much about that. And I remember him saying to me one time, the most complete conductor is one like he that is equally versed in symphonic music, opera, chamber music, playing, because I am a pianist, and accompanying singers. And I think that's what really makes a well-rounded musician, not just being locked in one set place or style. And I think symphonic conductors have a great weakness if they do not conduct opera. I mean, opera is a lot technically harder to conduct than symphonic music, especially in the fact that there's just so many things going on, so many things that can go wrong. One has to be, I know when I'm conducting opera, especially Puccini, I have to be two steps ahead of myself. In other words, almost anticipating what could happen and being ready when that does happen to, you know, be there.
This show has been on such a roll. I've had some really great minds and intellects and superstars of the arts and philosophy, John Haidt, Carl Savina, and today, Mr. Opera himself, Fred Plotkin, is with us. Fred Plotkin is actually in Fairbanks. Fred, what are you doing in Fairbanks?
I came to hear La Boheme and to meet sled dogs. Apart from anything else, my two passions are opera and dogs.
I believe you have to throw cooking in there too, though, don't you?
Yes, I cook for everyone. I adore it. I could say that I'm an Italian food expert. I think that's fair to say. I've written 6 Italian cookbooks, and I wrote a massive travel book for people going to Italy where to eat, what to eat, and the whole history of Italian food culture, so that it's all of a piece. Puccini, for example, would go hunting on his lake, which was called Lake Massaciuccoli. And then there was a little lodge at the edge of the lake, and he'd bring what he caught to the woman who owned the lodge, and she would prepare whatever he caught, whether it was rabbit or some kind of game bird. And all of these composers and many singers are very into food.
Wow. Well, Fred, it didn't click with me that you were the same guy with that would appear in the intermission sometimes of the Metropolitan Opera broadcast.
Yes, that's me.
That's you.
And I'm the funny one.
So was it Greg's idea for you to come to Fairbanks for this? I mean, it sounds like you didn't take too much persuading.
Well, it took no persuading. We had talked about it a long time ago, and then it gradually evolved. It evolved over many steps. And actually, to my great surprise, the other day, two nights ago, it seems like long ago, I was at an opera in New York and discovered that someone I know has just become the head of Anchorage Opera, Kevin Patterson. So I see Alaska a lot in my future.
Wow. Great. Great. Yeah. Well, it'd be great to have you. I'd love to get you in the studio here sometime. It'd be wonderful, and we could talk about food or opera or both or whatever.
Both. I mean, seriously, a large part of what I do is about food sustainability.
Oh, great.
And I'm very interested in discovering the traditions here. So often when I travel to a place, local people want to take me to steakhouses and so-called fancy food, when really what I want to do is get right into the soil and the waters and find out how people eat locally and what the traditions are locally. So in these days here in Fairbanks, apart from delicious Italian food at Gambardella's, I'm going to really try to eat very local.
I'll tell you one thing you'll be too early for, but once it gets rainy, closer to the Alaska Range, I'm really thinking sooner or later Alaska is going to become known as a mycological adventure of the first waters. I think we have some of the most amazing variety of mushrooms, many of whom of which I'm sure are edible, that just has barely been explored.
You know, there's a region of Italy called Trentino, and in Trentino, every police officer also has to be trained in mycology so they can identify mushrooms. And I wonder whether a comparable thing could be done here, where a certain kind of public official, whoever that would be trained so that people who gather mushrooms before consuming them can bring them in for inspection to be assured that they're safe. That would be a good idea.
Wow, amazing. You'll just talk about anything, Fred. let me try you on this one. You know, as a starving art student, you know, I really relate to the whole Garrett scene and the cafe scene and all that. And I couldn't wait to go to Europe when I was in art school. And so my second year, me and another guy, me and Glenn, we just dropped out. And we went and we saved our money up and we bought a ticket on a Norwegian freighter and went to Le Havre and bought little motorized bicycles and rode all the way to Naples.
Fabulous.
and we decided to go to La Scala because we'd heard about it so much, and they were doing Donizetti. They were doing, in fact, the Elixir of Love.
Mm-hmm.
First off, we had always heard that it was kind of a folksy experience, you know, and people would have food in there. They'd be throwing food at one another. So we thought it'd be rowdy, and instead it was extremely formal.
It's very formal. It's Parma where they throw the food. In Milan, they don't throw food. They throw rice because they eat risotto in Milan. So you think you're at a wedding, but actually you're at the opera.
We were so disappointed with the production. We found that it was... the sets were cheesy, and it was like, I don't think we were the only ones. I think people were coming and going to catch whatever aria that they thought would be the good one, and on like
what
that.
What year was that?
It was 1964.
1964, okay. The sets were cheesy. But they've been improved. La Scala now is pretty fantastic. I worked at La Scala in 1978, 1979, and it was the era of a stage director named Giorgio Strehler, and I was his assistant. And Strehler was at that time the greatest opera director in Europe. and therefore he introduced a style of production that was not fancy, it was not heavy, but it was gorgeous theater, and everything made sense. And after that, he revolutionized the way they stage opera at La Scala. So you got to go back. Get a new scooter, get a Ducati, and scoot over to Milan.
I actually look forward to it. And
yeah.
I was almost in there, but I went to Turin instead and on up in Aosta. And I found food up there, let me tell you that.
I'm sure you did. the cheese of Fontina cheese is marvelous. Turin, by the way, is one of the great opera capitals. You know, La Boheme premiered in Turin.
No.
Not Milan. It premiered in Turin, as did Puccini's Manon Lescaut. And
even Tori didn't know that. He was telling me about this Basso, the philosopher guy that he's going to sing the aria of, and he says, and you know, the singer knew Puccini, so he persuaded him to stick an aria in there.
It's true. But the thing is, never mind opera, the chocolate bar was invented in Turin. So to me, that is sacred territory.
Yeah.
Some of the best chocolate in the world is in Turin.
So let me ask you your thoughts on this. I mean, being that you're into this food sustainability issue, what about cultural sustainment? One of the reasons I really wanted to do this show is to acquaint an audience, a rural Alaska audience, that where opera has never shown up in their village or town, to just give them a little taste of why people so fall in love with it. And I wonder if you wanted to maybe discourse on the importance of that, making that connection.
Well, the thing is, many people I meet, I'm something of an operatic Pied Piper. I can't sing. I wish I could. But I could do everything else in opera, and I tend to get people very excited about it. And this is what I tell them. Opera is about us. People say to me, well, I have nothing to do with opera. It's not about me. I don't get it. But if you've ever fallen in love, and if the person you've fallen in love with maybe falls in love with you, but then you have an argument, then you break up, and then you get back together, and then perhaps one of you gets sick. We all sooner or later get sick. We all sooner or later die. I just told you the story of La Boheme. But the story is not just about those bare facts, but it's about the emotions. And I heard Jamie talking about the words, and I agree with her. But I would say to you that the primary message is not in the words, it's in the music. Because when Rodolfo takes Mimi's hand and says, "Che gelida manina," how cold your hand is, that's his way of discovering that she's not well and what a beautiful young thing she is, and there's something wrong. And he develops care for her. His feelings for her are not in the words, they're in the music. So whenever you go to an opera or listen on the radio, listen to the music. It's not like theater where the words predominate, the music predominates. And I come from a word background, but I'd be the first to tell you that music takes primacy over words in opera. But if you accept that you don't understand everything with the words, but through opening your heart, suddenly you become a much more feeling, emotional person, and it affects how we live our daily lives. When I see people, when I interact with them, and I see the real human tragedies and comedies and drama of real life, I understand that that's reflected in the opera. Now, you don't have to analyze it, but you just feel it. What I love is that we open our emotional vein when we're going to the opera, and in daily life, we don't do that so much. We have our behaviors, we have our ways of interacting and not connecting. And opera is so much about the human connection. And if you open your heart to that, you tend to live much better and live more fully. And that's the thing to connect with. It's not academic. It's not about learning something and then saying you know it. It's about accepting it and feeling it.
Fred Plotkin is author of Opera 101, A Complete Guide to Learning and Loving Opera. How long ago was that written, Fred?
That was written in 1993, before supertitles and before all kinds of things, but it's very current. It's the best-selling opera education book in the world, and it's used just about everywhere, and it really has struck a chord, because what's different about that book, and I'm not trying to sell it because it does sell, is that most opera books feel very academic, and this one speaks to you in a way that I just addressed your listeners. It's about what you experience in opera, not about what you're supposed to know.
Do you get out? You sort of are New York centered, but do you get to see other operatic productions in other places?
I travel almost constantly. Uh-huh. I write the most read opera blog in the world, and you can find it by going to Google Fred Plotkin Opera Blog. And I do a series in it called Planet Opera, in which I write. I don't review, as you can imagine, because I'm in the profession. I wouldn't want to review people. But I write about operatic life in different cities. So recently I've done London, Paris, Vienna, Zurich, and I'm going to write about Fairbanks. That story should run probably the end of this month or the beginning of the next month. Valencia is coming up, Switzerland. I go everywhere.
Yeah.
Basically, I design my life so that I can travel, see opera, and taste local food.
Yeah.
I'm a pleasure activist.
When are you going to be in Valencia?
I just was in Valencia. I was there in June, and I learned to make paella, and I went to their fantastic opera house. That's an amazing opera house there. And so that article should run in early September.
So are you going to be there for the dress rehearsal this evening?
I'm not going to go to the dress rehearsal because there's a restaurant here called Gambardella's, which is a great Italian restaurant, and I'm hosting a food and wine dinner that people can attend if they're in town. Here's the number, 457-4992, and they should call and make reservations. 6 fantastic wines, 6 beautiful courses, using Italian food preparation and Alaska ingredients.
Oh, man. What a seamless plug. I love that. You're so graceful about that, Fred.
So that way, I'm going to go to both opera performances. In fact, I'm speaking to the audience before both performances of La Boheme on the 12th and on the 14th.
Well, do you have a notion of how well they're doing so far?
I have not followed it at all, but let's put it this way. If Gregory Buchholter's in charge, it's worth traveling to Alaska for.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you go along with what Tori said then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tori?
I mean, this is a marvelous musician. I don't know if Greg is listening. If he is, he's turning red, I assure you.
You know me, yes.
But no, I have known his work
for many
years. You guys
are kind. I love what I do so much, and I'm glad that shows, because there's nothing greater than to create great music. And then, again, we're going to plug La Boheme again. There's nothing greater than conducting La Boheme.
Really? That would be your favorite one to conduct?
No, but, I did just say that. I can't say I
know, it's like Joe Franklin. That's the best book I ever read.
Before here, and that was my favorite at that moment. Conducting the Mahler Symphony was an equally great experience. I think it's so important for an artist to be in the moment of what they are doing and just to be totally submerged in it. And, but Puccini is special because of the passion. And Fred, talking about the melodic content and, also something unique to Boheme, well, not unique, but something very special, is that every character has a theme. This is something Wagner developed later with the leitmotif, not so much later. But Musetta has a certain theme. Every time she comes out, you hear it. Mimi has a certain theme equated with her. The Bohemians, every time they're together, they have the opening of the opera has a theme. And I mean, there's just so many ways that people who may be novices about as musicians or about opera can make a connection to this work. It's all there.
Another thing I'd like to point out about that is that the themes change. They're the same music, but change how we hear them throughout the opera depending on what's happening to
them. Exactly.
So, for example, as Mimi dies in the end, spoiler alert, Mimi dies in the end, the music in the orchestra diminishes. It's the same music, but the number of instruments playing, the volume, everything diminishes. And it's Puccini's very subtle way of helping us understand that her faculties are dimming and her heart is slowing and her pulse is getting softer.
Absolutely.
And rather than have a thud of a death and, boom, boom, bang, like Wagner, she fades out, which is actually much more realistic. And it's just, that's why everyone cries at the end of La Boheme. I heard you talk about James Levine. I once heard him say that one of the hardest things for him is not crying as he's working at the end of Boheme, that he has to focus on the music and make it happen for the audience. But his inclination would be to burst into tears as well. I still do. I've seen Boheme 100 times.
And imagine, and the singers were singing this music, preventing themselves. Yep. Barbara Fritzoli was telling me how hard, well, she was talking about singing Sua Angelica, but I know it applies because she also just did Mimi with us. The singers who are wrapped up, caught up, about to die in this point, and then the poignant music, and they have to fight off the tears because, of course, how could they possibly emit a good sound while they're while they're in tears?
Another thing about Barbara Fritzoli, that woman can cook.
Wow.
Not
too much time elapses before Fred makes a parallel to food. I love it. Actually, Fred, you know, one of the probably most poignant moments for me is you talked about Que Gelida Menina when Rodolfo at the beginning meets Mimi and he says how cold her hand is when she is dying and they are finally alone. Their friends go out to get medicine. They're alone, and she recalls how they met, and then she sings the exact melody that he sang to her. And Puccini writes this little staccato on Se mi la, she riscaldar, as if she can barely get the energy to sing it the way he did. I mean, it's such an incredible moment. That's just minutes before she dies.
Man, I think I would probably be tearing up even in the first act.
It's also sort of a false alarm that's very moving at the end when Mimi briefly closes her eyes and the audience thinks she's dead. And then most of the Bohemians leave and she says, "Son andati, fingevo di dormire." Have they gone? I pretended to sleep. But we think she's died.
Right.
And it's very scary. I mean, scary in the sense of drama.
Right.
But then when she wakes up again and then we realize that this really is the last moment. And let's not just talk about the death. My favorite scene is actually Act 3, the winter scene where Mimi and Rodolfo part, but only until spring. The music is gorgeous in that act. So, I mean, the whole thing. But I love Act 3 more than any other.
And don't forget, we have snow on the stage. So yesterday, as it was snowing during rehearsal, I said to the orchestra, I said, "Well, now I can say I've been to Fairbanks in the winter in the snow." And they all said, no. Because I've never been here in the winter. I was making a joke about that. But we actually have snow on the stage in Act 3, which I think is...
I want to thank everybody for being with us, because we just about got to wrap it all up here. But this has been... This has been a warm, fuzzy kind of show, and I really appreciate everybody being willing to play along. When is the production mounts? What, this weekend?
Thursday and Saturday at Herring Auditorium.
And it is at what hour on Thursday?
I'm almost certain it's at 7, but
evening. Okay, gotcha.
Have to check. No,
it's okay. Great. So the opera is happening in Fairbanks, and I want to thank all of our guests for being with us. Tori Allen, thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.
Sport, and Fred Plotkin, Mr. Opera.
Thank you.
Gregory Buchalter, Jamie Rose Guarin with us earlier. And next week on Talk of Alaska, well, we're going to do the arts some more, but it's going to be Gold Rush Girls, the musical. Thanks so much to Kristen Spack and to Ish Strever. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Avtech is recruiting rural Alaskans for computer and network training with no cost tuition for qualified applicants. For more about the Village Internet Agent Program, call 1-800-478-5389. This message sponsored by Avtech, Alaska's Institute of Technology. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.